I think so. Then you do.
I can only see Houston a few people.
Trustee Houston is here. Trustee Williams is here. Yeah, quorum.
Okay. Great. Because there's all of these things we have to tell everyone about. So we might as well start for that. So I do want to call the meeting to order. And we always call the meeting to order with the Pledge of Allegiance. So if I could ask Trustee Harrison to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Do you want me to stand up? Can I do it?
It's appropriate to stand.
Okay. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All right. I am informed that I must tell you all that Governor Newsom issued Executive Order N-2520 on March 12, 2020, and Executive Order N-2920 on March 17, 2020. Portions of the orders relax part of the Brown Act. In part, the orders allow elected officials to attend a meeting via teleconference without having to admit members of the public into the location from which they are participating under N-2520. And orders that such a body need not make available any physical location from which members of the public may observe the meeting and offer public comments under N-2920. Anyone wishing to participate may do so via the Zoom link, which was provided, and the meetings are also recorded. Public comments were submitted today electronically to Stacy by 2 p.m. I believe she has a number of those. Those submissions are considered public record under the Public Records Act and are therefore subject to public disclosure. Submissions will be read aloud at the meeting and must comply with a 5-minute time limit. Submissions must either address an item listed on the agenda or be within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. In accordance with Board Policy 2350, members of the public who wish to address the board on any agenda item prior to or during the board's consideration of that item. This, I don't know what the sentence is because it's who, they should be doing something. Well, it's a good sentence. Okay, matters not appearing on the agenda may be heard after the board has heard all action agenda items. Comments must be limited to 5 minutes per speaker and 20 minutes per topic if there are more than one speaker. At the conclusion of public comment, the board may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be put on a future agenda. As a matter of law, members of the board may not discuss or take action on matters raised during public comment unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion or action in open session. And anyone who requires disability-related modifications or accommodations in order to participate in the public meeting should contact the Chancellor's office at 909-388-6902 as far in advance of the board meeting as possible. That being said, let me announce the closed session items. We shall discuss the conference with labor negotiators. We shall discuss the public employee discipline, dismissal, release, or non-reemployment, if there are any items, and I don't see any listed. We will discuss conference with legal counsel and anticipated litigation. There is one case. We will discuss the conference with legal counsel on existing litigation. And there are two workers' comp claims. Is it required that I read the number? Nah, okay. It is required.
It is not.
Thank you. And we shall also discuss the conference with real property negotiators in regards to the pro swap meet San Bernardino property and the property located at 114 and 124 Del Rosa Drive in San Bernardino. So are there any public comments on closed session items?
There are not.
Okay, good. Then those will not be read because there are none. So at that point, I would like to convene to close session. At this point, the trustees will leave this Zoom meeting and sign in for the closed session Zoom meeting. So I'll see all you trustees and such over there momentarily. Thank you. Okay, is the interim chancellor here? Can we start?
We can, Madam Chair.
Thank you, thank you. All right, I want to reconvene the public meeting and we'll go forward to the report of actions in closed session. Would the clerk please read the actions?
Go ahead, Trustee Harrison.
You need to unmute me.
Are you unmuted now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, on May 4th, 2020, the board unanimously voted took action to approve the settlement 256 with employee number 4018. On May 14th, the board unanimously took action to approve the settlement of workman's comp claim number 565447 with employee number 868.
And as I understand it, that's all the readouts, correct?
That's all the readouts. We only had two.
That's okay. Thank you very much. Public comments on agenda items. I believe that staff will be reading this out.
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Okay, regarding agenda item 11.10, appointment of interim managers was submitted by Yendis Battle. Hello, my name is Yendis Battle, and I have been a loyal employee of the district for over 19 years. I was previously with KVCR as the senior accountant for almost 13 years, but have transferred back to fiscal services. On today's agenda is the hiring of the interim associate general manager, Alfredo Cruz. Why would we rehire someone who already failed at the same position? I'm reminded that insanity is repeating the same plan, but expecting a different outcome. The outcome will not be different. I previously spoke about the mismanagement of KVCR, and with this appointment, they are heading down the same path. Alfredo was the GM from October 2013 to February 2017. Alfredo lacks the work ethic to lead the station. Someone who would work 2 days a week from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. does not deserve to get paid $164,000 a year. He lacks the initiative to lead, as he never made decisions. The managers who reported him did. Just to point out his lack of leadership, when a prior manager was relieved of their duties, the consultant from CCS informed them, not the general manager. In August 2014, the district hired a consulting company, CCS, for $336,000 to help fundraise for KVCR. No money was raised due to the ineffective leadership. The consultant was tasked with working on a day-to-day operations and handling employee issues instead of raising money. A development director was hired in May 2016 to help with fundraising. However, that person had no knowledge of or experience with public media, and again, no money was raised. How can you lead your staff when you're not even in the office or available? The economy was doing great then, and he could not balance the budget. Now we are in a financial crisis, which will make fundraising for the station more difficult. He is not the manager to lead KVCR into the future. As I stated before, public media is a small niche, and yet, since March 2012, the district can't seem to hire an experienced manager with any proven success in public media. Once again, this is your opportunity to make a change, and with this appointment, this is not the change needed for KVCR to succeed. As a member of this community and prior financial supporter of KVCR, this appointment does not change my mind about supporting the station again. Okay. The next agenda item is 12.5, resolution supporting AB 2910. We'll have 20 minutes for these four comments. I write today in solidarity with the Student Trustees of California. As we all know, the education of students is the sole purpose for which colleges and universities exist. It is the primary duty of a college's Board of Trustees to uphold the quality of education provided and to respond to significant issues as they arise. To that end, every issue ultimately boils down to improving the student experience. That's the supreme beauty in having a student be a member of the Board of Trustees. The student member serves as a mouthpiece, amplifying the concerns of students to the highest power on campus. They alone can provide up-to-the-minute perspective on the policies and procedures of a college has now and how they are implemented. Authentic student perspective is one of the most precious and valuable resources to a college administration when making decisions. By virtue of being a student trustee in the state of New York, when elected to my position, I was guaranteed the same rights and privileges as any other member of my board, as codified in New York Education Law 6306. This included full voting membership and automatic right to be present for any executive sessions of the board. Having a vote puts students on an equal footing with other board members. It inspires veritable pride in membership and confers responsibility as well. In my experience, my vote was not often significant. I wasn't a tiebreaker, but my opinion did give weight to contested matters, both in support of and in objection to. But if the opportunity should come where a board is split, there is no doubt in my mind the student should have the right to break the tie because fundamentally students are impacted. This can end up advantageous to the board when faced with criticism as the student is perceived as the one in control, just as light of praise, the board will be the focus. Students aren't asking for control. We simply seek a meaningful seat at the table. New York has extended full voting membership to student trustees for decades and yet to face issue as a result of that fact. One vote isn't much to ask for, and when a position of the Board of Trustees is reserved for students, it is a clear message to students, staff, faculty, administration, and the community alike. The student voice is meaningful and needed in continuing and improving the student experience. A seat on the board with full voting membership emblazons the institution's stance that shared governance is a necessity and the bare minimum students are owed. Therefore, I implore you, members of the Board of Trustees, to vote in favor of enfranchising student trustees. The second item was submitted by Andrea Wittig to the San Bernardino Community District Board of Trustees. On behalf of the Cerritos College Board of Trustees, I am writing to express support for item 12.5 on today's agenda, a resolution supporting AB 2910. Cerritos College wholeheartedly supports AB 2910 with modifications proposed by the Community College League of California. At its April 15th meeting, the Cerritos College Board of Trustees adopted a stance of support for AB 2910, recognizing and valuing the student voice across the state. It is my hope that the San Bernardino Community College District Board of Trustees also supports the statewide measure mandating each community college district to give the privilege to cast a student trustee advisory vote and the ability to make and second motions without further authorization of the governing board. The next one was submitted by Amine L. Mosnine. I'd first like to commend this board for all the work it is obviously doing well. Time and again, I'm impressed by the intelligence and integrity of the student leaders I've met who have come from Crafton Hills College and San Bernardino Valley College. Elijah is one such student leader, and I'd like to commend him for taking the lead on such an important issue. Student trustee enfranchisement, the idea that student trustees ought to have a full vote, is not a new one. Resolutions were voted on and passed at the Student Senate's General Assembly as far back as 2005 to urge action on this front. This year, the SSCCC and a coalition of student trustees from across the state worked together to get AB 2910 created. While dropped due to the COVID-19 epidemic and the legislature's limited bandwidth, this bill signals the amount of progress made on this front precisely due to the efforts of years of driven student leaders. As we worked to get AB 2910 created, I faced many questions. Many of these were valid and prompted reflection and refinement of the proposal. A few proved to be unfounded, but ensured we did our due diligence. I'd like to note and respond to some of these concerns to ensure your board has an accurate picture as you vote on this resolution. One of the first questions we faced was around eligibility. Concerns around undocumented students and other populations being eligible surfaced frequently. Specifically for undocumented students, SB 225 by Senator Maria Elena Durazo expands eligibility for state appointments to any California resident over the age of 18, thus allowing undocumented student leaders to serve. Furthermore, AB 2910 and other proposals would center on school definitions of student trustee eligibility, which usually looks solely at whether the candidate is a student in the district. Student government is one of the best avenues for marginalized communities to get involved and is much cheaper and more accessible than running for conventional office. Allowing for a full vote is actually an effective way to empower students, undocumented students among them. Another concern was frequently brought up is the idea of tied votes. I have two responses to this concern. The first is that research into several of the largest districts found that there are remarkably few votes where the outcome would be split by factoring in the student vote. The next is that any proposal that can only pass by suppressing the student vote really should not pass. The discomfort of the students will still exist, it just won't be factored in during the vote. But their concerns can and will be heard through other avenues, meaning that passing resolutions over their concerns will only lead to issues in implementation down the line. Another issue that was raised frequently is the idea of closed sessions. The current educational code allows boards to grant student access to closed sessions. A full vote can be provided without changing this portion of Ed Code, which would strike a happy medium between schools being able to include students in important conversations without having to affect the privacy of certain topics that can be handled in closed sessions. One of the most interesting issues we faced was the idea of election law. The concerns around student trustees giving students double the amounts of vote or students or trustees living outside a district boundaries were also frequently raised. According to the Legislative Analyst Office, the nonpartisan analyst for the state legislature, this issue isn't so clear-cut. An appointment process where students vote for a nominee that is confirmed by the board or where the student government nominates someone for confirmation by the board are just two ways that such an issue can be resolved. Such concerns weren't enough to prevent the Legislative Analyst's Office from deeming student trustee enfranchisement feasible. Finally, I'd like to note that such an idea is not without precedence. Washington, New York, and Utah, among other states, provide their student trustees with a full vote. For decades, these states have trusted their student leaders to be effective advocates and have been rewarded for doing so. At the very least, there is no evidence at all to suggest any of the states have suffered by providing a full vote. This suggests that any concerns about student leaders being swayed or tipping the balance of votes in a dangerous direction are overblown or not grounded in reality. I hope San Bernardino Community College District continues its strong history of empowering students and provides an avenue for them to empower itself. Students like Elijah will come and go, but these proposals and avenues will continue to create a framework for generations of students to succeed and create change in their communities. Thank you for allowing me to provide my perspective on this issue. The next comment was submitted by Danny Threacol. My name is Danny Threacol, and I serve as president of the Student Senate for California Community Colleges, SSCCC. Before being a part of the SSCCC, I was first a student trustee for the Los Rios Community College District. In my position, I strived to make sure the students' voice was heard. However, once I began my term, I found it increasingly difficult to do when I had no rights. No right to a full vote and no rights to closed session. The only right I had was an advisory vote or a vote that doesn't count. It was as if I was offered a seat at the table, but was assigned to sit kids' table. I kept thinking to myself how I could possibly serve the students of my district under these conditions. My concerns and complaints went unanswered. I then realized that I am only allowed one term in my life to serve in this position. I could not get anything done without the proper support, resources, and rights as my other board members receive. I may be a student, but I am also a mature, educated young adult elected to serve in a position no one but my students take seriously. Assembly Bill 2910, supported and led by the SSCCC, gave me hope that someday the position of student trustee will be seen just as serious as a regular trustee. This bill would give the ability for boards to say to students, you matter, and that your voice will not be silenced. No more will your elected student representative sit through multi-hour long meetings and not hear anything. They will be able to vote and have it count towards the tally. They will be able to make meaningful input during the meeting and in closed sessions. They will have access to district resources and information to help them better trustees. I hope this board of trustees recognizes the inequities in our system that does not allow students to participate effectively in governance, and today make the decision to move the system one step closer to closing the equity gap and empower the student voice. Thank you. And the last public comment is on agenda item 13.2, analysis of AB 705 submitted by Jewel Patterson. We want to start by thanking you for your ongoing analyses on AB 705 across the district. Additionally, we are pleased to see the impact that AB 705 is having to increase the number of students accessing and completing transfer level English and math. It is easy for us to lose sight of so many things during this time. We want to encourage you to stay the course and keep going strong with the attention and momentum that has been demonstrated thus far. Now is not the time to be complacent. Use this moment to show up for our most vulnerable students in ways that so many other institutions have not been. We would like the board to analyze retention and success rates for this first, and maybe not last, semester of distance learning. How will AB 705 implementation be monitored during this time? What will be done to engage Black and Latinx students, especially those with limited access to broadband and computers? As the COVID context develops, we know that our Black, Latinx, and Indigenous students will be most heavily impacted. It is imperative that our students' progress and successes continue to be monitored and disaggregated by race, gender, and campus. We appreciate that progress on AB 705 is highlighted in this board meeting by gender and campus. Additionally, we request that the following be discussed at the next board meeting or during a special study session. Root cause analysis of these opportunity gaps by race and gender, success data broken out by campus, race, and gender, success rates of student in remedial courses versus transfer level courses, success rates of students who enrolled in co-requisite courses versus those that did not. To reiterate the requests from the Campaign for College Opportunity at the most recent meeting, we ask that the district and all campuses consider the following investments. Additional supports outside of the classroom for Black students, implicit bias training for faculty, because we know that Black students do not feel welcomed in these classes, cultural competency and curriculum, recruitment and retention of Black faculty. Thank you for your time and consideration. And that concludes the public comments on agenda items.
I am pressing there, good. I have been pressing the unmute button for a while. Thank you very much, JC. Presentation. Maureen Toll and Brian Brinkley have a presentation for us on the Public Agency Retirement System, PARS, and Vanguard program. Can we turn the mic over to them?
Good evening.
Maureen, I think you're unmuted. Maureen?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you for allowing me to present to you this evening. I am going to give a brief update on the Pension Rate Stabilization Program Trust that the district has its funds invested in terms of the plan activity and balances and such, but then I'm going to hand it over to Brian Binkley, who is the, as you know, the portfolio manager, managing the pools that you are in, to speak further about the investments and his sense of the markets and such. Let's see here.
Maureen, if you can just say next page and then staff will.
Oh, okay. Will, all right. Yeah, yeah, thank you. Yeah, yeah. I have no control. Okay.
No. None of us do.
Okay. Briefly, on this first page, just wanted to remind you that PARS is the trust administrator. I represent PARS. U.S. Bank is where the money is custody as a trustee. And then Vanguard is the investment manager. Go to the next page. Thank you. The trust under the IRS rules can only take distributions to pay directly to STRS or PERS or to reimburse the district for past pension costs. And that is a slide that you've probably seen before on projections of what the increases in your PERS and STRS rates will be that's been provided by the system and numbers that you've provided us. Go to the next page. So you made an initial contribution in July of 2017. Since that time, additional contributions of $81.7 million, so total contributions of $87.7 million. As of March 31st, net earnings were $1.5 million with an account balance of $87,982,386. Just as an update, as of April 30th, that balance was $93,385,367. And in that month, you made back $6.9 million in earnings. So the market was down significantly in March and up in April. So you can see by at this next slide, for each plan year ending June 30th, what your contributions and balances were in totality. So you had $75 million in contributions in total assets at the end of June 18 fiscal year and $74.9 million total assets. There were no contributions the following fiscal year ending June 30th, and the balance was $83.3 million. And then this fiscal year, 9 months into it, as of March 31st, you've made $11.7 million in contributions and $87.9 million in assets. There are 12 sub-accounts within this trust. There are currently seven funded, and I won't go into heavy detail there, but this shows the balances, contributions, earnings, and account balances for each of those as of March 31st. So returns by year for those fiscal years ending June 18 had a 2% net return, ending June 19, 7.21. And then as of March 31st, the first 9 months of this fiscal year, negative 4.17. I'll let Brian get into a little bit more detail on this, but this year you opened up a second investment strategy, which is fixed income only, and there's no exposure to equities. It's just U.S. bonds and non-U.S. bonds in this. The accounts mirror each of the sub-accounts, and my understanding are primarily for setting aside funds for distribution. Go to the next page. And then the majority of the assets are in the conservative portfolio, which is 56% fixed income and 42% equity. And Brian will talk a little bit more detail about how that conservative strategy is doing. I think there's just over 2 million in the fixed income and the remainder is in the conservative portfolio. There are four strategies that you can use through the Vanguard program. Right now you're in the conservative and fixed income, as I mentioned. And this table shows what the returns have been as of 3/31, going out 1, 3, 5, 10 years. And so it shows conservative, which is 3.1%. That's roughly the time you've been in. As of April, that's 4.49% return for that portfolio for you. And then just wanted to mention that this is an economies of scale investment pool. So as assets grow for everyone investing in the pools, the fees go down, and your fees have been going down since you began to contribute in 2017. And they're now at 0.03% of assets or 3 basis points. So it's a very low cost approach to investing. Now I'm going to turn it over to Brian Binkley.
Okay, can everyone hear me? Hi, everyone.
Yes, we can hear you, Brian.
Very good, thank you. Well, good evening. It's good to be with you virtually. And I'll start on the next page and briefly recap the markets in the first quarter, but I'll give you an update of where we are now because thankfully we've seen a good rebound. And please interject with any questions as I'm going through the next few slides. So,
your connection really is breaking up.
Okay, I'm dialed in via Zoom.
We can hear you now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And I've tried not to put on the video to take up any bandwidth.
Yeah, now you sound good, but a moment ago, no.
Okay. Okay, let me try again. What I was saying is about the first quarter was everything about it, so many ways, was historic. I think you're all familiar with how much the market tumbled, which is on this page. So U.S. stocks were down over 20%. Non-U.S. stocks fared even worse, down 24%. And like any crisis, financial crisis, what does well and what provides ballast in your portfolio is fixed income. And in the center, you'll see that U.S. bonds were up over 3%. If you go to the next page, what I was mentioning about, you know, just how extreme everything was during this first quarter is it took stocks, these are as of 12/31/19. So looking out 10 years, the assumption was for a median return of 4%, but there's that range. And of course, as you'd expect, a conservative portfolio has some equities. That expected return is 4.5% over 10 years. Well, given what's happened in the first quarter, now market valuations have contracted as the market has fallen. And so what this means for these 10-year outlooks is that our outlook has gotten more positive for equities because of the falling valuations that happened during the first quarter. So at least for the conservative portfolio, which has some allocation in the equities, as we update this over the first quarter, the outlook would be a little bit more positive as far as the expected returns over 10 years. I would expect the fixed income portfolio expected returns over 10 years to be down a little bit. And that may come as no surprise because the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates along with other central banks to zero. And so we're starting at much lower yields than we were at the end of last year. So I wanted to present that as some context as we look forward. Looking forward, that was for the 10-year. This is data for the 30-year. We, you know, for long-term investors, we tend to more focus on the 30-year, but we provide both of those for clients. And then the next slide, we'll start to get, if I'm not mistaken, into our outlook. What is Vanguard seeing as far as their outlook? Of course, it is still cloudy right now. It's there's a lot to assess. But if we look forward, we're still expecting a growth to return in the second half of the year as the economy opens up. So we expect this to be a short recession due that it was the catalyst was a virus or more of a market event, as opposed this was not a structural problem with the companies or banks or the economy, of course, which was in full steam prior to this. And so that's why we are expecting as the economy to open to see a rebound in growth in the second half of the year. However, with that as backdrop, we don't expect it to return to its previous strength until very late in 2021 or early 2022. So it will take some time for the economy to fully recover. But the always good to keep in mind is that the stock market is always forward-looking, and it does rebound quicker than the economy. The best thing to look at is use the context of 2009 as an example. The market bottomed in March of 2009, but the economy was hardly in good shape back then. And same here, where the economy is still struggling right now with all the job losses, but the stock market is looking forward to expected returns. And so that's why we've seen the rebound. We do expect policy and interest rates. I'm giving an updated view. These were put together a few weeks ago, but I'm just giving you our outlook as it stands as today. Policy and interest rates have come as no surprise. We'd expect those rates to be low for quite some time. As I mentioned, we think it'll take a long time for the economy to rebound. Therefore, the Fed will stand pat with very low rates. And as far as global asset returns, I alluded to that on the previous page. Looking at longer term, because of the sell-off, valuations got better, and expect higher returns for equities over the next 10 or 30 years versus what they were in the end of last year. What I could say, some of these slides, which I won't go into, but you're right to forward, this is the context of the GDP, what I was talking about. We're expecting to see in the second quarter a fall of, in the range of 20 to 30% on an annualized basis, which is unheard of. But you see that spike that we're talking about and that we're looking for in the second half. I can give you some updated numbers on the actual performance of the portfolios as they stood at the end of the quarter and through the end of April. And then with that, I'll take any questions. But the fixed income portfolio as of the end of March was up 0.27%. And you look forward to April 30th, the fixed income portfolio was up 2.47%. So some of the rebound. The conservative portfolio, as of the end of the first quarter, was down 9.3%. But as of April, it's rebounded some, and it was down 3.7%. So still negative, but certainly not as bad as it was at the end of March. Let me pause, take any comments, questions, or anything else you'd like me to address.
And I just want to say that, you know, when we invested in this portfolio, there was a lot of conversation with trustees and the entire colleges and the district as well. One of the things that we said was that we were going to bring Vanguard and PARS to do updates, at least on an annual basis, to the entire board. This update, we also do it at least once or twice a year for the board finance committee. So this is the update for the board, just to see how we're doing it. And if you have any questions as well, we had conversations as to the tolerance level of our investments, of our possible losses. I do want to congratulate you, I guess, more than anything. It's as Brian said, this is one of those markets that it was not structured. It was sudden. And as he said, he didn't say recommends, but he doesn't direct. It's asking us to move from the deviate from the structure that we had in the past.
That's correct. And thank you, Jose. If the goals of the organization and the timeline hasn't changed, we often say to clients then to stick with your asset allocation, because timing the market, we believe, is a losing proposition. So as our late founder would say, we would say stay the course. And therefore, you could even see in 1 month how much there's been a rebound. If there's, you know, there's some often questions, you know, after the presentation, please funnel those to Maureen, and I'd be glad to address any of them. And then I would be remiss with saying we value the partnership with PARS and San Bernardino, and so thank you for being a client.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian, Maureen.
Yeah, thank you. All right, let's move on. There are reports now. The first are board committee reports. Do any of the committees of the board have a report? If you do, please unmute yourself. There you go.
Okay. I just have a brief summary of what we did in the finance committee, and basically the basic present. We will be coming to the board for the next in June with a recommendation for the full board. We were looking at a resolution that we have we adopted it with some proposed changes. And so the final resolution isn't ready yet, but it should be ready by the time June rolls around. And basically, it's allowing design build to be used on some of our projects out of the bond money. So a lively discussion and a lot of concerns. And I think we'll have a nice document in June. That's it.
Thank you, Trustee Harrison. Do any of the other trustees have a committee report they'd like to share?
I don't have a committee report, but I did want to, we had to go out and do some recording for our students. And, you know, I just wanted to say to the board and to, you know, Jose, the staff was, you know, so good in how they made sure that we were safe. And because I was concerned about coming out and all of those kind of things. And they just really made sure that we were safe. And then even the food distribution that Diana partnered with Community Action Partnership, You know, it was just great. I got so much feedback from public members just saying thank you for opening up the campus. And just the responsiveness of folks during this time has been just great. And so, you know, I'm appreciative, and a lot of folks have just expressed the that. And so I just wanted to just make sure that the board was aware that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, good feelings, and just want to give good vibes and energy to the folks that are happy to go to work on campuses, and just, you know, everybody just continue to be safe. And, you know, thank you.
Thank you. I think we can all agree that our everyone involved in this organization has been outstanding professionals at this challenging time. I am honored and just thrilled to be working with everybody here. So, there were so many ways that there could have been problems, and there weren't, because everybody pulled their weight. And I'm just thrilled with everybody. Are there other committee reports, anything that anyone wants to report on?
Yeah, I think Trustee Reyes, I don't think
she... Are you raising your hand, yeah. Trustee Reyes?
You're on mute.
You're on mute. You unmute
yourself. You're unmuted, Trustee Reyes. You're unmuted, not Trustee Reyes.
Right. I'll have a follow-up question, a comment regarding the food distribution that was made by the county of Super, the county of San Bernardino and San Bernardino Valley College. If we are truly a community college, those are the things that we need to do, because there'll be a time when we want the community to know that they can count on us. Mm-hmm. I was privileged enough to have done internships in Washington, D.C., when I was a governmental relation. So I have a relationship with the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture has called us, one of the head persons, and to see if the county of San Bernardino is willing to get more food. As some of you may know, that there's going to be like $2 billion surplus from the Department of Agriculture going to all the nonprofits and the different counties. So I connected with Ms. Nichols, who's doing a very good job in the county. Hopefully they'll be able to obtain that food. And I requested for Nichols, connecting here with a person in Washington, D.C., is to work with Diana Rodriguez and Kevin to make sure that if more food comes in, and there will be coming, that we have an opportunity for us to continue to get food for our students that are in need and for our community that is in need. And Diana is looking at that, and Kevin is looking at that, because if we can take advantage of that, there'll be many, many opportunities. So I'm like Joseph. I wanted to thank Diana and Ms. Nichols for partnering, because that's a true partnership. So I was very pleased with that. We need to compliment Diana for going out of the way, and then Kevin as well.
Absolutely. Anything else? Okay, then, let's move on to Chancellor's report and key performance indicators. And Interim Chancellor Torres, if I could also ask you to address item 13.2, as it's in line with one of the recent public comments. It would be great if you could cover that at the same time. It's an informational item, but if you could.
13.2, yeah. Make sure I have the right one. Okay, Elaine. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So you see the written report in there, but I wanted to follow up a little bit on your comments, your positive comments as well from your perspective. I'm a big fan of our district, and I had mentioned before, prior to COVID-19, that the district has great momentum. And I can tell you that with everything that is going and everything that is happening, we continue to move in with this great momentum. We continue to make changes. We continue to move forward. And COVID-19 has not stopped us. And you're correct that everyone has stepped up. Everyone is contributing to this. Everyone is just doing an excellent work going with that. There's so much that we're doing, but tonight I feel we have to talk about budget. It is going to take high priority, and it takes moving forward. We're waiting for the analysis from the State Chancellor's Office. Governor Newsom releases May revised today. We're going to continue doing the analysis, but I want to share with you the various steps that we're taking to address these tremendous deficits that are coming our way. We are developing three different budget scenarios. Since the state does not have current data and enough data to provide us with accurate forecasting at the moment. As you know, they extended the deadline for income taxes and also property taxes, so the data is not there. So by having three budget scenarios, this allows us to be proactive and to make changes as necessary, depending on what the state comes back with. We anticipate that this is not going to be the end in June when they finalize the budget. We anticipate that in August, they're probably going to have a revision to the budget. So this three scenarios will allow us to quickly move from one scenario to another. We will be looking into various revenue generating ideas, such as leasing some of our properties we currently own. We'll continue to look at that, explore different options. We will be looking into eliminating any necessary expenses on our day-to-day operating supplies and contracts. We will keep only the essentials. We will analyze the way we do business and, if necessary, make permanent changes to become more efficient. We have already modified our promise in order to maintain the cost and in order to serve more students. We will analyze professional experts and short-term employees to make sure that we currently keep or they only keep the essential help for the operational needs. We will evaluate, we have already started evaluating all vacant positions, and we will move forward with recruitments only with the most essential positions. We will significantly review and reduce overtime as well. We hope the economy, you know, we just saw one presentation today, but there are different aspects and different presentations out there with economy. No one knows how long this is going to take. No one knows if it's going to recover in a year or 2 years. No one knows that. There are different scenarios out there. So we are hopeful. As you saw, we have a significant amount of money invested, and we hopefully those unrealized gains materialize so that we can use those with the general fund. We will continue advocating for the state for additional funds if they're available. It's going to be tough with that. But we will also be looking for flexibility with our categorical funds. We're going to be looking for that as well. Lastly, let me bring up the two ugly words that no one wants to hear, no one wants to talk about. Layoffs and furloughs. We will do everything possible not to get to this step. We know it is disruptive to our lives, the lives of our employees, our students, and everyone. Our work is disruptive to our work, and it's very demoralizing to all. We don't want to get there. We all need to work together on the previous steps that I just mentioned in order to avoid coming to this step. As we move forward, we need to make big sacrifices, and we need to make prompt decisions. But I do want all of you to know that we will continue to have open processes, open communication as we move forward to this financial crisis. So that's the verbal report in regards to AB 705. We continue to put the data out there. We'll change the data as we see fit. As you know, that is one of the goals that the board provided. The implementation of 705, the implementation of IDA pathways. So we will continue to focus on that. As I mentioned before, COVID-19 is not going to stop us from having those conversations. We will continue to have those conversations. This is just one of the reports that is generated. As you see this report 3 of 6, we have 6 different reports. So every single month we bring different data to you. If there's any information that is needed, please let us know. We'll be more than happy to continue generating data as we see. This is not, I see this as a first step for us. This is where we are, and it's the work that we have, that our colleges have done. And if they don't look okay, it's okay. We need to continue working towards making them better. That's the goal. But we need the data. We need to see it in order for us to continue making progress. That is my report, Madam Chair.
Well, Jose, I did want to just lift the fact that we were following through on providing the disaggregated data. I know personally the some concerns from the community has been expressed to me directly about our ability to make sure that students who are come to school through AB 705 have been able to succeed in the virtual environment, because those students may be negatively impacted by being virtual setting versus face to face. So,
yes.
The reason why I was saying if we could just kind of show the public comment that asked about specifically what the data was looking like, because the last meeting we told them that we disaggregated. And so I don't know if Jeremiah is able to do the actual report just for the folks that are on the line and with respect to that last public comment that we had.
Definitely will continue to segregate in the data, Trustee Williams. And you're right, we don't know what that is going to look like. We don't know what this online remote learning education is going to do to our rates. We will continue monitoring the data, and we'll make sure that we continue segregating the data as much as possible. We'll definitely do that.
Trustee Reyes, were you raising your hand? If you are, please unmute yourself.
Here it is. Okay. There it is.
Muted.
There it is. Yes. Trustee Reyes.
Well, I just also want to take this opportunity to compliment our acting chancellor. He's taking the leadership in terms of using, in my opinion, we should have been using this long time ago, which is KBCR, and reaching out to the K through 12 people, primarily the superintendent of schools with Ted Alejandra and Dr. White. He's creating an opportunity that I think is going to be very important to us after this is done and over with, because I think that they'll be able to see that, in fact, KVCR could be used to provide vital information, not only about the community, but also about educational opportunities for the general public, but also through K-12 and other institutions. So, Jose, I compliment you, and it takes a lot of work, because I know that you've had meetings with all those people, and I've gotten some feedback from Dr. White, Judy White, and Ted, that it's a pleasure to work with you and trying to be creative, reaching. For example, you also reached out to the fact that you want to be able to put something in the on KVCR in regards to the students that want to take a message to whatever for the graduation. And your vision is so good, because the Los Angeles area, they're doing that. But they're doing it through, Channel 4 and stuff, because they're in Los Angeles. But we have KBCR. So I compliment you, because you're using it very, very well.
Yeah, and I appreciate you too. And I guess, what is there anybody that's on this call that could decipher the informational item for the members of the public, and just kind of what are we seeing in this data that's been disaggregated? Because if I'm a parent or something like that, and if I ask for this, if I read this, I might not be versed to interpret. Is there anybody that can interpret the information item?
Yes, definitely. If we like, when we get to it, to the information items, like Dr. Jeremiah Gilbert is on the call. When we get to it, he can definitely talk about it a little bit more.
So that's what the chair was asking for that to be done as a part of your report.
If you like, we can do it right now.
That would be great. That would be great. Thank you.
That was what
I'm going to, definitely. Dr. Gilbert, you're unmuted, if you don't mind.
No problem. And in fact, the next one that you see, so this one we made sure and added the college level data. And starting with the next one, we're adding an executive summary, so that along with all of the details, we're also going to get takeaways. So, there's a lot of data in there. There's a lot of numbers. So trying to make it, we're, each one we're learning from. So we're trying to make it easier on everybody. In this case, we just, we looked at gender. Next time we're looking at age. We're still, another one we'll have for you is those with the co-requisite courses compared to those without the co-requisite courses. And again, this is all fall data. The spring isn't there yet. once we have the spring, obviously it's going to be a little different with the COVID-19. We'll really do a deep dive into the effects of the online. So we'll do a look at the transfer level math and English currently in person compared to online, and then we'll look at the change in spring and do a really deep dive, because that's certainly of interest. But I just wanted to let you know that each time we're trying to make this a little better, a little more useful for everybody.
Okay, Madam President.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate Jeremiah's comments. I would like the if my fellow colleagues have this, turn to page 51 of the report. I have a question and a comment. Page 51, if you could.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, my question, to which I got an answer, is, with all the good stuff we're doing, why was the persistence rate down? And I should have realized what I knew for some time, but forgot since I haven't been in the classroom for a long time. And that is, ironically, as we all know, when the economy is better, not that it is now, but when the economy is better, our student enrollment drops. When the economy is not too good, that's the reverse. And as I was told, and is correct, our persistence rate's a little bit down because the unemployment rate in the area, at least until recently, was very low. And our students therefore went to work and got good jobs. I'm hoping in the future, both the persistence rate and the economy will improve. But I appreciate both Jose and Jeremiah's comments to me. So thank you.
Yes, not a problem.
Okay, so how are we communicating this information to the public so that, and in what way?
Well, in terms of the KPIs, if you go to the district website and go to the click on research, the complete dashboard is there. The one, so on the website, the one pager that I send to you, there's a digital version of it, and then each separate one, if you click on it, you'll see the pages that we're looking at now. So all of that is available to the public. At the moment, we've not posted the AB 705, but I certainly can. We had been working on what's called a dashboard, so that rather than separate reports, you could go and click fall 19, school, look at age, ethnicity. That's something we've been working on. It's not quite ready yet, but that was the intent. Until that is ready, I'm happy to, there's a place under research, I could certainly put the AB 705 reports that we've been submitting to the board, so that way they're available, you know, anyone could access them.
Well, you know, Chancellor, one of the things that, you know, I would recommend or request is, there was an opportunity to meet with some of these communities, like the Campaign for College Opportunity, just like have a dialogue about what the data means, because the data can help us figure out if the plan intervention makes sense, and you know, we can start planning versus just waiting to see what happens with students. And so you know, I think with this environment, the way what we're in, we don't have the same opportunity to connect with people, because in a meeting you can connect sidebar and kind of talk, but it's kind of harder to get access to our folks. And so if there was a way of your interest that you might figure out how to do some outreach with some of these groups, it could be a fruitful conversation.
Definitely we'll do that. And as I mentioned in my report, it has not stopped us. We always continue to meet with people. Meeting in person, I feel is necessary at this moment. We can continue meeting in Zoom, via Zoom, however it is. We'll definitely continue to do more outreach to our partners in the region. We'll definitely continue to explore AB 705 guided pathways. As mentioned, one of the goals. In addition to all the other ones, we'll continue to make sure that we achieve the goals that you set for us. So we'll make sure we do that. Just want to make sure one last comment and the response of Trustee Reyes. If we go back to the Chancellor's report on page 46, I just do want to acknowledge that, you know, KBCR has been developing a few things in the past couple of months. You know, you praise me, but it's all the staff that is doing the work. I'm not doing the work. It's them that are doing the work, really. Inland Edition is one of those initiatives that was created. Inland Edition is a radio show designed to provide information to the Inland Empire. I believe I mentioned this last month. We don't have a lot of information related to the San Bernardino Riverside County. We created Inland Edition to hopefully provide that information to all of us in regards to COVID-19. There have been a lot of great interviews that took place in Inland Edition. The latest one, as Trustee Reyes mentioned, is that we're going to hopefully partner with high schools out there in both San Bernardino and Riverside. We want to be able, you know, with graduations happening virtually, graduations, we want to make sure that they have, people, families have opportunity to see their graduation on TV. So we're going to partner with them, and hopefully they're able to provide the file that is needed for us to televise their graduation so they can see it on TV. But again, I just want to make sure that credit goes to staff. It's all them. It's everyone else that's doing the work.
Thank you. All right. So, other question on that. So as we're collecting this information and we're talking about how it applies to the academic experience, are we bringing students into the discussion at all on this, as it is them that would be benefiting from it?
I'm gonna
Any
ask
changes
the
we're making? Yeah.
I'm going to ask the presidents to jump in on this conversation, if they don't mind, please. Dr. Harry Horan and then President Rodriguez. I'm going to see if they can unmute themselves.
Can you take the question you had, Trustee Virasal?
Sure. As we're going through the AB 705 and we're finding these things that we need to make corrections to, for instance, how are we bringing students into this? Are there plans to bring students into this so that as we're making those corrections, we're kind of checking them, you know, cross-checking them against the end users, which are our students?
Well, that's a great question that I don't know that I have a great answer for. We do have a work group that works directly. It's comprised predominantly of faculty on their efforts to implement and then refine their AB 705 practices. But we don't necessarily have a student advisory group on that process at this point in time, but it's certainly something we can explore.
Thank you.
I would say that at Valley College, we're doing similar to Crofton Hills College. Mm-hmm. We don't have a specific student advisory group for this. However, at all of our shared governance committees, we do discuss the progress of AB 705, and there is student involvement and student voice at those meetings. As we continue to develop, especially in this new way of learning, for our students, it's definitely something that we're exploring. We've already sent out one survey to students asking them questions about how we're doing, and I'll address a little bit of that in my report. And we'll continue to do that and include our efforts in AB 705 as well.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it just occurred to me if I was among a people group that would be benefited, I sure would want to have some say as to whether or not I felt benefited. So great, thank you very much. Moving on then, in our reports, San Bernardino Valley College Academic Senate. San Bernardino Valley College Classified Senate.
Steph, do you mind unmuting? I think we need to unmute people.
Can I, Celia needs to be unmuted, yeah. Thank you, and I know you have to go, thank you, yeah.
Well, that was Stephanie, not me.
Oh, I saw Houston. I'm sorry.
I know. I wondered why I was leaving too. So.
Go leave.
All right then. Well, good afternoon. You know, it's been my practice at the each academic year to put together a summary of the work of the Academic Senate. And I've done so this year, and I emailed a copy of the report to Stacy this morning, and she is going to attach it to the minute. And you'd be happy to know I'm not going to read it word for word to you. I do want to bring out some of the highlights in the area of consultation and action of the Senate. One significant was working with Crafton College to with background noise. So we worked with Crafton Hills College Senate on advancement and rank and revised the language, and it took just about a year, but we do have it done. I believe it's on your agenda for later this evening. The Academic Senate, we supported the district's white paper call to action regarding the student-centered funding. We reviewed and approved a map of our institutional learning outcomes through our student campus climate surveys, which is going to provide us a one way to facilitate evaluation of institutional learning outcomes. And then, of course, last year, we worked with Crafton Senate to pilot a joint equivalency process. And change the language of the AP. And so we started implementing that this fall, and then through the spring we have worked together to evaluate the new process and recommend and approve changes to how that process works based on your experience in all semester. But please take a moment to look over the report when you receive it, especially the last page. That's where you find a long list of faculty who have stepped up to serve the Senate, the campus, and the district as Senate Executive Committee officers and faculty leads. Everyone listed has just done an outstanding work, often over and above their load, even over and above their overload throughout the academic year, and especially over the past 9 weeks. We really need to recognize those faculty. Oh, and those for meetings. We've actually had three since the last time I saw you in Academic Senate. At our April 15th meeting, we were still very focused on getting as much information as we could about our current situation. And I want to thank Interim Chancellor Jose Torres for taking some time to update us and answer all our questions regarding the district response to this continuing crisis. In that meeting, we also finalized the class cap recommendations and had some really good conversations around the DE addendum and the local DE process for classes in summer and fall. At our April 29th meeting, we actually started to synthesize our information, and we made 8 recommendations, which is like unheard of, that centered around how to move forward during this continuing emergency. So we had several recommendations that centered on continuing and enhancing communication and consultation. One particular recommendation was focused on establishing a joint executive senate and having the senators commit to hold regular meetings during the summer. So as Chancellor Torres and several of you have talked about how we need to keep communication open, the Senate will be here to consult with you about fall semester and about budget cuts, and made it well known to the administration that we are here, able, and willing to meet. And if our meeting pattern doesn't work for you, we can meet another time. We made some recommendations around fall semester, and this was April 29th. We suggested it should be primarily online with labs meeting face-to-face as health directors and safety allow. And lo and behold, within a week, that directive came out. We also had a recommendation around making completion plans for suspended classes and getting those plans started by the end of this semester so that students in those suspended classes could know that when and how they were going to be able. And we had 2 very practical recommendations around distance education. It was not that scary. One recommendation was to really follow our distance education committee guidelines in regard to synchronous and asynchronous online facilitation of classes. And then to that end, we made a second recommendation that we should repurpose that in-service day that is normally graduation and use it for training and on best practices for online instruction and student interaction. That's an in-service day to faculty. Let's use it in a way that's really going to benefit faculty and students as we move into online instruction. So the actual recommendations, the text, I did put them in the summary report, so you may look at those and read them in their entirety. And at our May 6th meeting, we elected our new officers for 2020 through 2021, and I'm pleased to report Bethany Tasaka. She will be continuing as our academic secretary, and Davina Burns-Peter was elected our vice president. And let's see what else. Accreditation. So the final draft is out to first read to constituency groups, and we're gathering feedback and putting that in to polishing up and having our final draft for second read available July and approval in August. Okay, so now I have to do the serious. This is my last report to you, the Board of Trustees, as academic unit president. Can you believe it's really already been 4 years? Those years have been a tremendous opportunity for me to experience personal and professional growth, and I'm very thankful to have the opportunity. It has been an honor and a privilege to represent SBVC faculty, to work with campus and district administration, and work with you, the board, to create better environment for students and work together and move things forward. So Dr. Amy Avalar, she really needs no introduction. Amy was elected as our incoming Academic Senate by her peers in October. It has been a pleasure to work alongside her this semester. Amy assumed the duties of, or she will assume the duties of Senate President on May 22nd. I know she will lead the faculty well. I would like to welcome Amy and let her just say a few words right now, if I may. And I'm putting her on the spot, I'm wondering.
That is okay. Good afternoon. I do look forward to working with the Board of Trustees. I look forward to representing the faculty at Sereno Valley College and working together in the direction that best serves our students. These are very different times. I think it has been an abrupt change for the faculty, the staff, and our students all together. And I think we have moved in the direction to try to ensure that our students can complete their courses and still obtain a quality education and continue on with their plans, whether it is transfer or into the workforce. So I do look forward to working with you this upcoming 2 years. And thank you for giving me a few minutes to introduce myself. But I am a chemist by nature, so I do like to look at things in a way that we can solve in terms of problems. And so I am a problem solver, and I hope that that kind of perspective is welcomed. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. And again, board, thank you for being gracious for the last 4 years, listening to my reports. And I will actually get to see you again in my role as accreditation faculty lead. So we will still get chances to talk to each other next year. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Houston. It has been an honor working with you. You are an incredibly collegial person and wonderful to work with. And we look forward to working with Dr. Avalar as well. All right, San Bernardino Valley College Classified Senate Report.
Hello, everybody, good evening. Allow me to begin by explaining why you're hearing from me instead of Ms. Judy Rodriguez. Judy has taken a short leave of absence, so as VP, I will be assuming the role and responsibilities as Senate President for the time being. That being said, First and foremost, the Classified Senate would like to publicly acknowledge the board members, Chancellor Torres, district representatives, and the president of both campuses for making decisions during this public health emergency, which take into consideration the health and safety of its employees. Although some of these decisions have created frustrating and uniquely complicated challenges, not to mention possibly having real fiscal ramifications, the choices being made so far have spoken volumes to the priorities of those who are making the decisions, putting the health and well-being of the district's employees and the community we serve at the forefront. Thank you very, very much. I'm pleased to be able to report that we are continuing to plan for a version of Classified Connection Week. This year's event was unfortunately canceled due to the corona pandemic. However, we are currently working closely with the campus president and the Professional Development Committee to come up with ideas on how we may move forward while keeping an eye on doing so safely. Undoubtedly, this will create some scheduling challenges, and we are working to address those. We are also still working with the president and the campus managers to determine a future date for our annual Classified Appreciation Barbecue, as well as the planned softball game, which typically accompanies the barbecue and is held in conjunction with events designed to celebrate Classified Employee Appreciation Week statewide. We have successfully completed our selection process for 10 scholarships the Senate awards students at SBVC in both academic and athletic disciplines. These scholarships are funded directly by fundraising efforts to the classified professionals. And given that fact, we are actively working on coming up with creative ways to continue fundraising in light of most of our current and past fundraising opportunities having been canceled or possibly canceled or postponed in the near future. We would also like to take a moment to congratulate Cassandra Thomas, the chemistry lab technician at SBVC, on her recent appointment as president and chair of the district assembly. To our knowledge, this is the first time that a classified employee has held this vital position, and we would like to not only recognize the committee's bend toward inclusivity, but wish Casey a productive and successful tenure in this position. We would also like to thank Jeremiah Gilbert for his work during this tenure as president. At our last general meeting, we finalized the appointment of the classified co-chair to the Guided Pathways Committee in hopes of providing a staff perspective to the committee's decision-making process. We would like to thank those on the committee who supported the creation and inclusion of this role and its perspective into the established committee makeup. This week also saw the voting process begin for this year's SBVC Classified Employee of the Year. We received 4 staff nominations for this recognition. The nominated individuals were theater technician Michael Gonzalez, administrative secretaries Amanda Moody and Judy Rodriguez, and technical support specialist Cedric Wren. Voting will conclude next Wednesday, and the recipients will be announced during the Spotlight in Our Success proceedings. Additionally, we are currently in the process of holding officer and senator elections for our executive team for the upcoming 2020-2022 term. All of the incumbent e-board members are up for re-election, and we should have this process finalized in the coming month. Lastly, we would like to take a moment to make a formal statement in support of the student resolution authored by our own student board trustee, Elijah Girard, in request that students who serve on as trustees be granted full voting privileges on the statewide level. As it stands now, students enjoy the right to make motions and second motions, as well as in some districts statewide, occasionally being granted the privilege of sitting in on closed session items concerning student discipline. If we believe that their input is valued enough to motion and move items forward, or to sit in on proceedings in closed session items and discussions, how do we then justify the attitude that this somehow shouldn't extend to actually giving them the ability to see items, many of which they helped initiate, through to their conclusions? How do we not then afford them a modicum of power to help in their efforts to have a legitimate say in their own educations? We as residents of San Bernardino County are keenly aware that we live in a community that is plagued with issues of disenfranchisement, marginalization, and disadvantage. The classified senates on both campuses have listened to their arguments, and both have come to the conclusion that their request for voting privileges is in line with what school districts as a whole should be doing to ensure student voices are not marginalized further when it comes to the shared governance process. In this instance, when constituency groups band together in support of an initiative or resolution, it shouldn't be thought of as a gang up, but as a real indicator that changes are needed to ensure that we all are moving forward together in a productive and inclusive way. As leaders of this community, we are given the opportunity to ensure that these issues are slowly chipped away, not just in our hopes, but by our actions. What does it say about our institutions if we actively proclaim that we are all here for the students, that this is a place where dreams come true, and then take actions that undermine this concept? What does it say about us as a community if we further perpetuate marginalizations by allowing essential voices to go without any kind of leverage? Voting to support our student trustees' resolution does not automatically give them the vote they desire, but shows that we are, as a district and as a community, support their efforts to try to appeal for these rights on a statewide level. It validates their cause and demonstrates our commitment to making sure that our goal of inclusivity is met, that our wish to center voices who are already dealing with issues of being discounted are not only addressed, but raised and supported. How can we as an institution say with one side of our mouth that we would like to publicly and officially recognize the singular achievements and contributions of our student trustees by authoring statements in support of their hard work and dedication, and then pass items which enshrine the lack of their requested privileges yet for another year? Items which send the message that the established ways of conducting district business are still the best and most inclusive way of doing things and require no further amendment or examination. Supporting this resolution sends a message to the students and to the community we serve about who we are, about what our values represent. Are we an institution that rises to the challenge of modeling and practicing real inclusivity and diverse thought? And in that vein, are we actually giving power to those whose interests we are charged at protecting? Are we, as educators and leaders of this community, making room for and giving power to the voices who will someday be its next? And what does that say about us if we don't? Any decisions made today concerning this topic are literally our institution taking a stance on saying that this is who we are and this is what we believe in. You also say it in a way that is indelible. As our school board trustees, you say this for all of us, managers, faculty, staff, students, all of us alike. But more importantly, you say it about yourselves. We hope you consider supporting our student trustees' efforts in trying to ensure that their voices has weight behind it, that our pledge to supporting them doesn't end with where the boardroom begins, and that our commitment to shared governance and transparency is also backed by our willingness to be accountable to those we are champion. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.
Thank you very much. I'm having a little trouble with my mouse and getting to the unmute. It doesn't always work as quickly as I might like it to. San Bernardino Valley College Associated Students, please. Okay. Crafton Hills College Academic Senate.
I believe Sophia is here for
Associated Students?
Yeah. Or did she log off?
Can we unmute her if she's here?
Oh, yeah. She needs to be unmuted. She just messaged me.
Oh, thank you. Can we unmute her, please?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead with your report.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Sophia Hearn, and I'm the Vice President of Student Senate at SBVC, and I'm reporting on behalf of SBVC's Associated Students, which represents about 19,000 students full-time and part-time. These past couple of months in quarantine have definitely tested everyone's abilities, I'm sure. However, our Associated Students at Valley have still been able to accomplish things. We have held many events this past year and have worked tirelessly in being servant leaders to our students. We have always tried to keep an open door for our students whenever they needed a quick scantron before class, and now in times of a pandemic. It has been difficult for us to host events, but with the help of such amazing faculty from our Office of Student Life, we would not have been able to get through this. With their help, we have been able to host multiple Zumba, yoga, and trivia days, even a Q&A with our very own president, Diana Rodriguez, for students needing answers in these uncertain times. We have also participated in the first ever virtual General Assembly. And of course, we have passed and sponsored many resolutions that we wholeheartedly believe in, which one is in support of the virtual commencement and the full student trustee vote resolution. In the last Student Senate meeting, we decided to allocate the rest of our general fund budget, which was about $30,000, to our foundation for scholarships. In this past year, it wasn't always easy getting faculty, staff, and admin to understand where we were coming from on issues we've had and vice versa, but it was productive and fulfilling. I hope that our next group of associated students that we are training will be able to maintain the relationship and connection we have with our district. And I hope in return, our Board of Trustees continues to support and nourish our diverse and brilliant student voices in every aspect they can. On a personal note, I want to give a thank you to all of the SBVC, CHC, and district employees for helping represent students across California in DC and at Haku when a group of us students received a grant and scholarships for our community project proposal. Thank you all so much for the opportunities.
Thank you very much for your work. Crafton Hills College Academic Senate.
I'm here, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Thank you, good evening, board. I would like to start by expressing my gratitude for how well you have managed to maintain regularity during this crisis. Thank you. I have a few things to report on. The CHC Academic Senate reviewed and voted in approval of our accreditation report. We've also reviewed and approved new procedures for emergency remote instruction. I would like to again recommend that you agendize the Student Senate resolution as presented by Elijah Girard. The Crafton Academic Senate voted unanimously in support of the resolution, and it would be very meaningful if the board would hear this resolution in a formal way. During this crisis, our students need to be heard. Though we are all throughout the entire globe experiencing new realities right now, most of us, and I'm including myself in this, have never experienced what it's like to be a student going to college in the middle of a crisis like this. So we need to hear and value what they have to say. Our students have expressed, and I'm hearing this in multiple meeting venues, that they feel like their voice is being lost and not heard. We're in a situation where their voice is so critical, so I recommend that the board do everything it can to be more inclusive of the student voice. After months of inquiry, research, and consultation with the statewide Academic Senate, it is still my position as Academic Senate President that the agenda item 12.7, the academic layoff, has been conceived outside of process. It's my position that it's moving forward outside of process, and it is also my position that voting for this item will continue to be outside of process. In case you have not heard, I made the decision to resign as Academic Senate President at the end of this current academic year, a year before my term ends. I would like to close my report by telling you that it has been an honor to work with you all representing the faculty at Crafton Hills College. And I want to tell you how much I respect each of you and the work you do, and I appreciate the work that you do for our staff, our faculty, community, administration, and most importantly for our students. Please stay safe and healthy and take care of yourselves and those around you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Crafton Hills College Classified Senate. Crafton Hills College Associated Students.
I think we might have to unmute him. It's Sean Brown.
Yeah. Can we unmute Sean, please?
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Hello, my name is Sean Brown, Vice President of External Affairs at Crafton, and I served this year as Crafton's delegate to the SSCCC for the past year and a sustainability officer for the 2018-2019 school year. In my report to the Board of Trustees, I wanted to share what my experience and the experiences of many of your past student advocates have been like. Last year, the first opportunity I had to organize was when Crafton Hills Student Senate teamed up with our Health and Wellness Center to help end smoking on campuses. We passed a resolution, held public forums, met with local health officials, and applied for and received grants specific to protecting the well-being of students. Dr. Hannah Sandy, the director of Crafton's Health and Wellness Center, personally testified to its necessity and efficacy. Not only did that campaign end in failure, it was never even brought to the Board of Trustees based in part by misinformation given to students, where it was decided by a tiebreaker where no student voted. We bounced back. We were told perhaps work for smaller victories, more direct change. This year, I personally worked to reduce the number of parking tickets given by tying parking passes with admission payments. Due to complete disregard by administrators and a lack of clarity regarding parking law with the board and school policies, this cause was also cast aside. After this, students were made aware of the fact that people skateboarding on campuses were facing exorbitant fines. We tried to make skateboarding allowed on certain areas of campus, or at least, at the very least, add signs warning students about its legality and the fine. We were told the problem was blown out of proportion, and the officers decided when it's not appropriate to fine people. Not a single word of policy was changed. When a committee was put together to select a new chancellor for the district, it featured 20 faculty, administrators, and trustees, and two students, each of which was expected to represent more than 20,000 students each. When this issue was brought up, it was said it was too late to change. In these last 2 years, the only substantial piece of legislation authored by and fought for by students has been the resolution passed guaranteeing payment to students on district-wide committees. After that resolution was passed in June, it took 5 months of students advocating to see a single student paid. Today, the board still does not have a single item on its agenda which was authored by a student. The resolution which students authored and which has been passed by 5 of the senates in the district then took 3 months to even be addressed by this board. The board then had a closed session without consulting a single student, where they added a resolution to the board book which does not contain any of the language of the resolution and which is far less binding. What has become clear to me after my time attempting to advocate in this district is that the voices of students matter, but only superficially. We beg for activists, for kids that want to be a part of their school and their community, and when we are handed them, you no longer want it. You would like to bring us in front of legislators and advocate for this district to receive more funds, but when students have ideas or want actual change, we pretend they don't exist. Simply wait for them to graduate and keep the status quo. How can we keep asking kids to give themselves to this district if we are only going to be seen as members of the public? All Senate elections have been completed and 2 new Senates await you. I know they won't stop fighting. I only hope they can get some help along the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. CSCA.
Hi, thank you, Madam President, Board of Trustees, Interim Chancellor, College Presidents. I've always tried to start off my reports with the positive. I just want to reiterate Ernest's statement with congratulating Cassandra Thomas with the appointment of President of the District Assembly. I have to admit, I was part of the District Assembly back when Don Averill was our Chancellor. And to my recollection, this is the first time a classified individual has been able to participate in that role in this committee. So congratulations to Casey. I also want to congratulate Ginger Sutphin, who was selected as this year's Area F Region 18 Member of the Year. And her work with HR as as our chief union steward not only has built the respect for her amongst our district, but also amongst the ranks of individuals in our area of CSEA. So congratulations to both of them. We are currently actively working with local groups to ensure the safety of workers in all areas of business. Right now, there's a huge push, as you can see, with PPE and things of that sort. And so we're working with local officials as well as local agencies to make sure that all workers are taken care of. And to hear the comments made about KVCR and the approach that they took just makes me proud to actually be part of the San Bernardino Community College District and know that we're already pushing that forward without having to hear sort of the backlash from other groups or other companies that are not following these PPE regulations that are sort of helping us protect our workers and protect the individuals that come into our spaces. To add to the KBCR, it's great that we have the support, but I also want to reiterate that we have two theater departments within our instructional areas on both campuses, which hold the same skill sets as well as a similar space, and where we can utilize these to help improve our instruction if we go into sort of a hybrid or a remote sort of learning environment. And after conversations with entertainment officials yesterday in Los Angeles, that is really sort of the platform in which we are looking at. Because as you know, many large venues are not being allowed to be utilized as large venues. However, we can still utilize those large venues in ways that accommodate social distancing and accommodate remote learning to the best of its abilities. Now for more of the tougher stuff that I'm not too happy because I try to come with a positive view all the time. Today, you're gonna make a decision on page 290, and it refers to the layoffs of three classified positions. We have asked the district for multiple information. Two of these positions are in the culinary arts. And yes, it does say due to the lack of work and lack of funds. Our concern with the culinary arts is simply that it has not shown us a lack of work. And because of the not showing the lack of work, our fear is that these positions would go to areas where I would have to come back to you and argue the point that, well, why is classified not doing this work? However, to encourage that that student workers are able to still continue, I would also say that classified need to be there for these student workers to assist. Because this is a learning ground, especially because it is attached to an instructional area. The matter of the EDCT, this position, when asked for the funding, we received a response that said that the funding was paid for this position out of multiple grants. It is unclear to us that all of these grants that are paying for this position are being removed, whereas it's clear that possibly one of these grants is sort of being resolved or dissolved because of its maturity of the grant. So however, regardless of decisions, we are in a position of making tough decisions across the board at this moment. So regardless of the position, I do want to make sure that these individuals are given the right of the contract in which we hold with the district, that will give them options. Moving on, so many times I've heard this last couple of months that we need to work together because we're all in the same boat. Yes, we do need to work together. We are not in the same boat. We are in the same storm, and each one of us has a different boat. Some of us have yachts. Some of us have the rinky-dink fisherman boat. And some of those fisherman boats are our students. Making sure that these individuals have the tools and the equipment for them to participate in either a remote learning or a hybrid type is essential for us to continue to make sure that these students are progressing and moving forward to the next level. And so I really want to emphasize that we take this into account when we make those decisions, because a hit to the lowest paid person may not be the same effect to somebody at the highest paid position. So when we look at budgets, when we look at pay, when we talk about furloughs, when we talk about layoffs, what is the impact of that individual versus the district as a whole? Because like I said, the lowest paid individual, a small hit could be a catastrophic hit. And then finally, as a proud alumni and staff of the district, we have, in just this past year, we have done some amazing things. I've seen raises to classified that I've never seen before. The Board of Trustees officers, I have never seen an entire female officer elected before since in my 15 years of the district. And I know that we can do one more thing for the students, and setting that bar to the highest level, and then making our district the best place to work in the Inland Empire. Thank you, and that concludes my report.
Thank you very much. CTA? San Bernardino Valley College President.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, there you are. There you are. I thought that was you. Okay.
I'm like, I just need to be unmuted. I couldn't do it myself.
I'm so sorry, and I can't see everyone. So if somebody else's name comes up and we're moving on, like wave your hands or something, slide around. I'm so sorry. Please go ahead.
No problem. So good evening to board and everyone. I'm Meredith McLaren. I am the CTA president, and I don't have a lot, but just a few things kind of give you some update on what we've been doing. As with almost all the other groups on these campuses, I have been so very lucky to have such a strong team working. We've had the faculty who are serving on the executive board and the committees for the union have continued to fulfill their duties and have are continuing to work to make sure faculty's needs as related to the contract are continuing to be met and addressed. And so, again, I'm grateful to everybody who has worked so hard through this transition in these times, but definitely to my board who I get to work with as well. So one of the main thing we did is we finished our officer elections. They just finished earlier in the week. So I will be continuing as president for the next 2 years. My position was up, but I was reelected. We have a new vice president at Crafton Hills College. Brandy Bayless is going to be serving now as the vice president. We have a new treasurer, Paula Ferry Milligan. She works at San Bernardino. She's going to be the new treasurer. And we have a new full-time rep at Valley, and that is Ken Lawler. So those were the changes. Other people will be continuing on as well. Not all the positions were up. So the other part is just we will continue to negotiate over the summer. We're finishing up negotiations. We will negotiate over the summer if we need to address some of the issues with training and some of the accessibility issues that are coming towards faculty with this move to remote instruction for the fall. It's good that we have the notice that we knew it was coming, and then we can start to make these plans to make sure that the needs of students are met, but also that the work of faculty does not become overwhelming for faculty. So we typically have a summer plenary where we meet to plan for the following year. We want to meet. We don't know how, where, exactly when, what the regulations will be, but we have a committed team, and so we will get together one way or another and do the planning that we need to do for the following year. So that is all I have. That concludes my report.
All right. Thank you very much. San Bernardino Valley College President.
Good evening. So a lot going on at Valley College. So a couple of things, a few things that I want to touch base on. is that even though we are in this remote environment, we're continuing our work on AB 705, which was addressed just moments ago. Most recently, we completed our online placement for students to be able to go through that process and then be placed into their desired courses. This week, I had the opportunity to meet with ASG, and it was an open invitation to all of the students at San Bernardino Valley College. It was an hour-long session of some fantastic questions. I want to thank Sofia Herrera for moderating the session. Did it in a very thoughtful way and provided some very well-crafted questions. So thank you for that opportunity. We're also working with Crafton Hills College right now on a process for the distribution of CARES Act funding for our students. We hope to get that process underway very, very soon. And just want to give congratulations to the foundation under the leadership of Mr. Michael Lane. It's been a very successful couple of months for the foundation. Recently secured a grant from Growing Inland Achievement so that we're going to be able to provide hotspots for students who are in need. They also worked with the foundation, Michael also worked very closely with the district office and was able to secure a $100,000 award that will go to campus police so that they can purchase new two-way handheld radios that'll enable them to communicate more quickly and effectively to first responders and other folks throughout our community. Also, special thanks to Felicia Sanchez, who worked with faculty and others to help screen and provide more than 300 scholarships over the spring term in the amount of over $160,000. Still a lot of work going on in Guided Pathways, where we've developed a new website, still tweaking it just a bit. And we are also in the process of designing our efforts in a student-centered schedule model to streamline the student course offerings so that students can complete in a much more timely fashion. And we'll continue that work over the summer with faculty that are with us and also finish up that work in the fall. The faculty are currently working on how we are going to transition the fall courses to an online environment and working on determining which courses, which labs, we will be offered on campus in a face-to-face environment, practicing all of the safety precautions. And we hope to have that determination in the list of those labs within the next couple of weeks. We recently received the results of a survey that we distribute to students. We wanted to know from the students how we were doing and what they needed in this pandemic environment. So we sent out the survey. We had 450 responses come back. And I'm very pleased to say that the majority of our students, 73% plus of our students, were pleased with the amount of communication that they were receiving from their instructors. So very happy about that. And 66% say that they are, you know, feeling satisfactory or doing well adjusting in this online environment. Some of the things we learned where we need to get out more communication or provide more services on was that our students are requesting additional online tutoring, online counseling, study skills, techniques, and also mental health services. So we are looking at all of those areas and pushing out additional communication to our students. I want to congratulate our outstanding professors this year. Unfortunately, we don't get to recognize them on stage at commencement, but I want to publicly announce them and congratulate Bethany Tasaka and Davina Burns Peters, two just fantastic faculty here at Valley College. And congratulations to the marketing and our enrollment management committee. I just learned this morning, and I don't even think they know yet, that they received an award from the Academy of Interactive and Visual Arts for the 2020 Communicators Award for their work on our enrollment management campaign. So congratulations to both of those groups. Our virtual commencement is being put together right now as we speak. Super excited about it. Special thank you to Dr. Judith Baez, who was our, or is, I should say, our keynote speaker. I won't steal her thunder, but her words were just incredible. It was an honor to watch her film those. We have over 580 students participating in the virtual commencement. So all of their names will be read just as if they were crossing an actual stage. And you can view this on our website, May 22nd at 9 a.m. Feel free to be in your regalia while you're watching it. I'm considering that. And you know, it has been a very challenging year, but also a very, very good year at Valley College. We've accomplished so much together, and I couldn't be prouder of the work that we all did. It's a nice way to wrap up my fourth year as a president as I move into the fifth year. So that is my report.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all the work you're doing. The two faculty members who were named outstanding faculty, what do they teach?
Bethany is a math instructor. And I believe Davina is in our Arts and Communications Division.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right. Crafton Hills College President.
Thank you, Board Chair Beersell. I have a few things to update you on. Mostly, it's a lot of thank yous to people at Crafton. The first goes out to our research and planning office. The entire office has been just going way above and beyond.
Some advice, and I would like him to share that advice.
Certainly. Madam Chair, what I explained is the matter that is before the board right now is an annual requirement that you approve very specific duties that are part of that specific statute. The issue of putting items on the agenda is not included in that statute. And my concern is because you're voting based on that specific statute, entertaining a change that is not part of the statute would not give the public adequate notice and therefore could potentially run afoul of the Brown Act.
Okay, so knowing that, we Trustee Longville had an idea. Would you share that, Trustee Longville? Could someone unmute him, please?
Yes, I am. I would like to have us vote on the original motion as it was before the suggested amendments by Trustee Girard, and vote to approve that so that we have done in time for the May 15th deadline, by which time that has to be sent into the state. And then in addition to that, direct the chancellor that at our very next board meeting, we want on the agenda an item reflecting Trustee Girard's intentions in which the board will confirm what most, if not all of us, had already presumed to be the case, which is that student trustees may put items on the agenda for upcoming board meetings, just as any other board member can, and that the instructions to the chancellor are that he put such an item on our immediate next upcoming meeting agenda and that it not be delayed or tabled come hell or high water. It is on our next agenda.
That is exactly what you said in closed session.
That a motion, I second it.
Yeah, that was a motion. But do we have to do 12?
Yeah, I think we have to do the other one first. And I don't know if we need a motion for the second one. We may just be.
It's a direction. It's direction. So okay, really want that on there. We do not want to run afoul of the Brown Act. We really want it on there. We've been working under that anyway. And also, I believe there was making and seconding motions that need to, is that on? I don't have the book in front of me right now.
That's included.
That's included in there. Okay. Because we've been doing that. So the ability of the student trustee to present an agenda item or resolution will be on the next agenda. And we have no thought to believe that it would not pass unanimously.
Thank you.
All right, so we have to take a vote on 12.6, which is the annual student trustee privileges as put in the agenda. So let us do that, and then we shall end this meeting. Student trustee Mariscal Medina, how do you vote?
You might want to take it first, a second, Madam Chair.
Oh, didn't we?
I'm not sure if we did.
Longville moved it.
Okay.
I second it.
Okay, so with a motion and a second, we shall now take a vote. Student trustee Mariscal Medina, how do you vote?
No.
Student trustee Gerard, how do you vote?
No.
Trustee Harrison?
Aye.
Trustee Longville?
Aye.
Trustee Reyes?
Aye.
Trustee Singer?
Is he here?
No.
I don't see him. Trustee Williams?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye for the annual item. Okay, with the other item going on to the agenda. And I do not believe there is anything else on this
Longville moves agenda. Adjournment.
Ah, yes. We don't need a second for that, do we?
No.
No, we don't.
Be safe. Bye. Be safe. Bye.
Yes,
bye.
Yes. We are adjourning. Thank you very much, everybody.
Aye, aye, aye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night, John.
Good night.
Take care.
Same here.